Hi, everybody. It's Jim Bakiai, and the podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. I can't believe I left out one of the most important events in my life last week. I was so excited to have Larry on my show that I forgot to tell all of you that I am a first-time grandfather. And they're calling him Robbie, and he was born on April 26th. We have a slate of birthdays right after, and he decided he wanted to have his own. Two of my sons, Sam and Jack, are on the 27th. My darling wife, Jennifer, is on the 28th. And the baby of our family, Sarah, is on the 29th. And I guess Robbie said to himself, no, I think I'll have my own birthday. He's gorgeous. I'm smitten with him. And it's, as I said to people, it's a bit of a different feeling. When you have your own child, you have this sense of we've created something together. But when your child has a child, they shift right before your eyes into, oh my God, she's a mother now. She's still your daughter, but you just watch them in a completely different way and how they can appreciate life so differently when they look at this little bundle of joy. So we've spent the last week and a half doing what everybody does, watching them eat, sleep, and poop, and everybody else kind of sitting around. And I love putting him in that little spot on my chest, right underneath my neck, as I had done with all six of the others. It's such a joy for everybody in the family. So I wanted to share that with everybody, because it's quite amazing. Even the dog, Rudy, is quite excited about him. We brought him over to meet Robbie, and he sort of was like sniff, 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 sniffing around him. And then it was so cute. He sat right beside him, almost like standing guard, being protective of him. It was the cutest thing in the world. So I don't have a guest today, but next week, really excited to have Clayton Fike, who's the CRO for Flinks, one of the new tech firms in the financial services space. He'll be on my show next week, and we'll talk about open banking. We'll talk about the technology. He's got a really interesting past as well for a young guy. And so I'm really excited to welcome him on the show and chat with him about what they're trying to do, his vision of the future, how he sees the world of open banking. So everybody knows that I'm a huge Ray Dalio fan, that I'm obsessed with him and how he runs his company and how he thinks. And there's tons of stuff on Ray Dalio on LinkedIn and everything else. But more recently, he said he took a personality test and then he decided to roll it out to all of his employees as his hedge fund. He used some top psychologists. And his answer was the results were both mortifying and accurate. And I'm sure they were probably mortifying, because when you do that type of thing, it exposes the fact that you may have people in the wrong places. You may be utilizing the wrong skills with the wrong job. And not surprising, because when people do personality tests, nobody ever comes away from personality test saying, oh, that's not me. If they do, they're probably in serious need of some sort of mental intervention. But the thing I always found about personality tests is people would take them, they say, oh, that's me, I'm an ENFJ or INTJ or whatever else. But it's not about the personality test. It's about what do you do with the personality test? Do you then ask yourself the question, do I have this person's personality doing the right things in their job that actually they're really good at and suits their personality? It's like, you know, having someone who's an introvert, you know, in all aspects of a personality test doing cold calling is just a disaster, right? It's just like you couldn't ask them to do a more painful subject. Whereas, you know, extremely gregarious, someone outgoing, someone who's extremely competitive sees cold calling as something to do 500 calls a day, and I get, then you've got that person in the right spot. I'm always reminded about some work that I did way back at the Bank Credit Analyst, and they had, I worked with the sales force, and they had a gentleman there who was probably one of the most incredible cold callers I'd ever met in my life. he could open more accounts faster than anybody in the world. And the guy running the place used to say to him, that's really good, but you need to do a better job of maintaining the accounts after you open them. But it was the thrill of the kill. And then they had this other woman. This woman owned all of her clients. She went on vacation with them, knew all of their kids, was a true relationship manager. And they used to say to her, you got to get better at cold calling. You got to get better at cold calling. But she hated cold calling. She wasn't very good at it. And so this is going to sound like, wow, it's nothing earth shattering here. But when I did this work for them, I said, have you ever thought about putting them, the two of them, together as a team? And they sort of looked at me and said, no. And I said, because Chris is really good at bringing them in, but he doesn't want to talk to them after he brought them in. He wants to get back out there and find more accounts. She is really good about building a relationship, you know, owning these people. So anyways, they did. And the productivity of the group was incredible. My own son, Ed, learned this lesson himself about what he likes to do and what he doesn't like to do. And so when he interviewed at Plinks, which is, he is there as well, he was very clear of him. I'm a relationship manager. I don't like to do cold calling. If you're looking for a cold call person, I'm not your person. He'd already gone through that experience where somebody had hired him and suggested that, no, you're just going to manage relationships. I'm going to do the cold calling. But it turned out that wasn't quite the case. So it's important in personality indexing, not to just understand your personality, but it's important to be able to articulate what you want to do and what you're really, really good at. Now, psychological testing has always been one of those things where there are people that are great adopters to it, and there are people that think it's a little hokey pokey, it's a little navel gazing, it's a little too much for me. But I like it, and I use it, and I particularly use it in conflict resolution styles. I like it because it allows me to help people understand themselves better. And at the end of the day, that's the core of my practice, because you can't get better if you don't understand yourself. The more you understand yourself, the more you're willing to advocate for yourself. And the more you're willing to stand up and say, no, this is good and this is not good. And this is what I want to do and this is not what I want to do. So going back to this article of Ray's, he talks about that this was a moment of enlightenment on all of the people, but that they all had that same sort of moment of, okay, so now what do I do with this? Yeah, that's me, but now what do I do with it? Is this about making me work on the things? I'm an introvert, now you want me to be an extrovert, or now you don't tell me that, you know, I like people too much, right? And so now the hard work for Ray comes in that he's now got to look at his own organization and ask himself the questions. Do I have the people in the right spots? It's a very, very brave exercise. And I don't know if he'll get through it. I mean, he owns the company, so he's probably got a much better ability to get it done. It's very disruptive, but it's very accretive. If you can think about your organization like an athletic team or any team of any function, in that everybody is not interchangeable. That if I'm drafting a 5'9", 220-pound running back, I'm not going to put him on the line, no matter what. And I think that, and I've had a lot of sort of more recent experience about this, working with my coaching clients, and everything all leads back to the same roads for me. It all leads back to transparency and honesty in dealing with people. Stop trying to make people be something that they can't be. It's not that they don't want to be. Who wouldn't want to be better at something that they suck at? Everybody would. But what ends up happening is they just can't get better. And it's not their fault. It's not a lack of desire. It's not anything else. So if you're in management, take a look at your team. Think about your team. Ask yourself the question, are they playing the right positions? Am I diminishing their effectiveness by giving them things to do that they need to spend more time on doing because they're not very good at it? Whereas would I be better off giving them more things that they're really good at? Throw out the organizational chart. Throw out the levels like level 50, 52, 53. Start reorganizing your organization around people's skills. Obviously, the smaller the organization, the easier it is to do. But on the other side of the coin, my view is the larger the organization, if you can get that top 50 in those right spots, they'll get the next 50, the next 100, the next 200. And before you know it, this thing starts rolling down the hill. It's not the person taking the test that something has to be done. It's the person that they report to or they work with that has a better understanding of who they are. My particular case, I hate to be yelled at. I shut down. I'm completely ineffective. I get pithy about it. And my productivity goes to like, boom, to zero. You know, other people, you yell and scream all you want at them. It's like water on a duck. It rolls off the back and they move on. And if you don't understand that difference, then you're going to manage people differently, right? Like some people, the only thing they do understand is to be yelled at, right? The 2x4, boom, right across the head. I would rather you just be honest with me and just tell me what I'm doing wrong or whatever, and I will adapt. But if you yell at me, you lose me completely. So it brings me to the next thought that I had. I want to talk about fear, this veil of fear that hangs all out in front of us of being honest, about asking for what we want to ask for. I cannot tell you how many times I hear stories from people that work for people that they're not doing what they were told they were going to be doing, not getting paid, and all of these other things that go on, and yet people don't say anything about it. They don't say a word. And I go like, why wouldn't you? I don't want to piss them off, you know, and you don't understand. And I'm like, but it's okay to piss you off. It's okay to say you're going to get a raise in November, and February comes, and you say, ah, you know that raise I promised you never? No, I can't. It's not going to happen. You know that promotion, you know this, you know that. Or the worst one for me is always, you take a job and you think they've articulated it very clearly. And then what you find out is only a part of it is articulated clearly. And the rest was to say what they needed to say to get you to take the job. And then you have that moment of, God, this is not what I signed up for, right? How many people say that this is not what I've signed up for? One of my daughter's golf coaches, a guy named Matt Wilson, once said to me, one of the things he tries to do with his students is to get them to harness fear as a positive, as opposed to paralyzing them into a state of, being paralyzed about it. And it's a hard thing to do because I think we've all been raised, we're afraid of this, we're afraid of speaking up, we're afraid of all of these types of things. But I think if you can chin yourself up to taking on your fears by being honest and forthright and transparent, and it's about your feelings, right? As I've said before, nobody can deny you your feelings. And when you say to someone, this is how I feel, this is how it's making me feel, oftentimes people say, well, you misunderstood it. It's not what I meant to feel. You say, well, it may not be what you meant, and I may have misunderstood it, but if I did, you're the person delivering it. Recently, one of my clients was going to see his boss, and he had built up this amazing anticipation that it was going to be a battle. Afraid of it, don't know if he'll get it, all of these types of things. And he said to me, I went to the meeting, we worked on his stuff, and he laid it all out. And I went to the meeting. I told him all the things I wanted to do. I told him why I wanted to do it. I laid out the whole dinner menu right in front of him. And I was bracing myself for the battle. And he said, sounds good. Let's go for it. And he said, then I didn't know what to do with the next half hour that I had braced to argue with him about why we needed to do this. And I said, so all of that fear, all of that anticipation, all of that wasted energy for the week was useless. And he goes, yeah, I guess it was. And I said, it's always useless. And when you can get your mind to the point where I'm not going to worry about it until it happens, you'll be free. My kids always used to say to me, Dad, you're excited about going on the holiday. We're going here, we're going there. And I said, I'll get excited when I get there. We're 2 weeks away. We're 3 weeks away. Wasting my energy on sort of being excited about, oh, I'm going to go to Florida. We're going to go to London. We're going to go wherever is a waste of energy and it's a waste of mental space and everything else. However, when we get on that plane, I go, now I'm excited for the holiday, right? And at that moment, I can focus my attention. And I know people do this all the time, the fear factor, right? I can't tell you how many conversations I have with people when I say, you know, so someone was working on a job and I suggested something and they were like, I don't know if I could say that. And I was like, well, why not? What if they don't like it? And I said, then they don't like it. You know, what if they get pissed off? Then they get pissed off. If they get pissed off because you tell them how you feel, do you really want to work for those people? And everybody knows, Katie, you know, and everybody knows I love what I do. I feel like I'm freeing people from themselves and putting them in a better spot in life. And yet I'm saddened all the time by how afraid everybody is to be themselves. And I see it with every single new client that I have. They just don't trust that they are good enough. They just don't trust that they have the right to stand up for themselves. And I blame parenting on a bunch of these podcasts, but I don't even know if it's parenting. I don't know if it's in our DNA. I don't know what it's in, but it's really, really sad. And it creates a really, really big opportunity. So here's something I'd like you to do for yourselves. I'd like you to make a list of things that you would like to say or do in your life with other people. Things that not sort of, I don't like the way you wear your hair, or, you know, the shoes you have. I'm talking about you. First about you. Things that don't make you feel well. They don't make you feel good. They don't make you feel productive. Think about that list of things. What is it that just kind of like, I'm afraid to talk about it? Make that list. And then the second list I want you to make is the list of who makes you feel that way. What's their motivation in doing that? There are some people that are Machiavellian and they do it for those types of reasons. But my best guess is, based upon my experience, is that most people don't know they make you feel that way. Most people, if they knew they made you feel that way, would be mortified. Most people, if they knew they made you feel that way, would feel so shitty about themselves. And then the last thing, they would be very saddened that it took you this long to tell them. There is a respectful way to do it. There's a way to broach these subjects. And it all starts with you. This is how I feel. I feel underappreciated. I feel undercompensated. I feel underloved. I feel underrespected. I feel whatever it is you feel. Let's collectively overcome these fears. I have them. There's lots of things I'm afraid of. But I got to tell you, I got to brace myself to go into those conversations because they may not turn out perfectly. But at the end of the day, I feel much better. And if it turns out really badly, then I feel much better because I got to change relationships. I got to work with somebody different. And as all of you know, I'm pretty tight about finding clients and finding people to work with. But I want to help people embrace fear, not be afraid of fear, and recognize that by punching through and being honest with yourself, and bear in mind, think about it also as you're helping people stop doing things that they may not have known they were doing. And if you do, you'll be like all the people that I coach, be much, much happier with yourself. And I think you'll probably end up seeing opportunities in life differently. They'll turn out to be better for you. And you'll be a better person professionally and personally for that kind of transparency and honesty about who you are, how you feel, and how you want to be treated. Thanks, everyone. It's Jim Bakey. The podcast is Be You. Looking forward to next week. Drop me a line. You got a thought? Something you want me to talk about? Be happy to hear from you. Take care. Have a great week.